This is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Look at this, everybody. We're here. Live from Seahawks headquarters, it is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle. We're getting that much closer to the next game. It feels like it's been an eternity since the last game, doesn't it? Or is that just me?
Yeah, it does seem like it's been a while, but a lot of build up to this one. It looks like two closely matched teams there, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, when you look at the Seahawks and Ravens, and it's unusual in that you usually are talking about the two teams' defenses, but seems like the offenses are a little better than the defenses in this one.
Yeah, we'll talk to the Professor John Clayton coming up at 4 o'clock, as we do every day. Jessamyn McIntyre will make a triumphant return to the program for Washington State Thursdays. We'll see if she believes that the weather was playing any kind of part whatsoever in the Cougars' loss last week.
We will find out about that. Plus, we have a special treat for many Cougar fans that will be playing at 4:30. So you'll have to look forward to. Yeah, it's a 25-year anniversary of something that happened in Eugene, Oregon.
For Cougar fans?
For Cougar fans,
okay.
Yes.
All right, we look forward to that. And then our player spotlight at 5 o'clock. We'll unveil that at 5 o'clock, see who that's going to be. But the return of Jaron Reed has given people a lot of optimism, Dave. They feel like, okay, now we can breathe. Now we can relax about the pass rush or the lack thereof. And as much as he was great last year, I'm just wondering if we're putting an unfair expectation on this guy. We're talking about an interior lineman, not a defensive end. I know he's coming off a great year, but he hasn't played a game yet. And some guys don't just show up and become who they're going to be midseason. It may take him a few games, and I guess I'm a little leery of people coming out of this one disappointed if he doesn't have an immediate impact. I don't even know how long he's going to play out there, but do you think we're putting a little too much emphasis on his return, at least for this game anyway? The expectation might be a little high?
Well, I don't think it's going to unleash this bevy of sacks. I just used the word bevy.
You did. That was good,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, I heard Jake use it earlier, and it got stuck in my head.
You liked the way it sounded when he said it?
Not really.
All right.
Yeah.
Well,
bevy's
like
better
it.
Than myriad, though.
Or a cornucopia, or a plethora.
A plethora.
Yeah, of sacks. No, it's not all of a sudden going to be, they're going to get five sacks or anything like that. The other thing is it just depends on what kind of a player he is. Some guys are, I noticed Jadeveon Clowney, he said he didn't really know the nuts and bolts of the defense when he first got here. And
right.
He went out and I thought played well in his very first game. So we'll see how he is coming off that. I was a player that needed to have practice, and it was probably going to be pretty rare for me to come in game one and have this huge impact on the game. So yeah, we're probably asking a little bit too much of him, but man, this guy is he's one of the better interior defensive linemen in the league, so of course you're happy to have him back. Maybe they're going to have to double team him, and that'll free up the guys on the outside. So I think the guy gets double teamed a lot, gets overplayed. I think if you went and looked, there'd be a lot of times that it's not like, Jadeveon Clowney's getting double teamed every single time. Mm-hmm. But there's different ways that they can do to handle the blocking there. But it's just it's good that you get a good, sound run player. He's really both. I mean, he can rush the passer, but with this offense coming in here, they're so good. And, you have to be gap sound. You have to make sure everybody's in there in the right place. The other thing is experience. Guys that have seen blocking schemes before, if they have, they understand what's going on. And for the younger guys, sometimes don't. So this is going to be a very interesting game. I think the more I watch Lamar Jackson, the more, I don't want to say scared, but the more concerned I become, just because if he's going to be flying around the field and, running the way that he does and they're not able to stop him, it's going to be a long day.
Jim, you think we're expecting too much from Reed out of the gate?
Well, I do a little bit, yeah. I don't expect him to be in football shape, although he told Pete Carroll and he told the media, too, that he's been working out every day and he's so excited. And, yeah, he's like a little kid, and Carroll even said he's like a kid at Christmas, so he's going to be fired up to get in there, so he'll certainly be there starting in the rotation. I don't anticipate, though, that he's going to have a majority of the defensive snaps while he's out there. But still, his presence, having him back, he's going to be so geared up to make a difference. And just having one more player of his caliber on that defensive line, like Dave is talking about, it's bound to help Ansa and Clowney, Quentin Jefferson, all these different guys. I think the sacks are going to pick up this week.
It's interesting. You look at his career in the previous two seasons he played before last season, 1.5 sacks each year. Mm-hmm. So a breakout season, and you could line that up with a breakout season for Frank Clark, who ended up with 14 sacks, and you know, you had other people chipping in. So it'll be interesting to see. I think he's probably somewhere in the middle. I don't think he's a 1.5 sack guy a season, or I don't think he's a 10.5 sack guy. I think that could have been a bit of an anomaly last year, that a realistic expectation for him, if he's playing all 16, might be, what, 7, something like that? Would that be a good middling number for a interior?
Yeah, if he has a similar year to last year, I mean, that'd be fantastic. I'm really, you look back, I remember when he got the double-digit sacks, there was only two guys in Seahawk history that had done that from that position and get double-digit sacks, and it was John Randall and Cortez Kennedy. So that will be an indication. But, you know, the thing is, getting in football shape, I mean, I worry more about him in week two, just because when you hit people, your neck gets really sore. I understand these guys get massages right and left, though, so maybe that'll help. I can't imagine that. I don't think
I've ever got any.
There was a guy that everybody in Denver went to. The guy was, he was blind, and he was awesome. He's just a really cool guy. He did it out in the back of his house, like in his garage. He had in, made into a studio.
You guys didn't have somebody there in the building?
No, you had to get directions and go down there, pull out your Thomas guide. That's how we used to get around. Yeah, so that, you know, every once in a while, but, you know, these guys are getting them 2-3 times a week. That's why somebody was in here, I don't remember who it was. It's like, how do you handle these short weeks? Like, well, you know, you just got to get more massages and, you know, really take care of your body.
I'm that's like, terrible.
Wow, that sounds rough.
I think that was
Jerome
Brown.
Is that who it was? Yeah.
I got to get another massage.
Yeah.
Jeez.
So, but no, he's going to be sore half of this game. There's no question. You can't really simulate when you're hitting somebody with your head, that just jars your neck and, you know, the rest of your body. You're doing all kinds of different movements that you don't do in a weight room and you don't do off the field. So, but happy to have him back, and it's good timing, because I think this is going to be their biggest challenge offensively as far as a quarterback goes.
I have two questions. Do you guys like massages?
Yeah.
Is that a dumb question? Because I don't really like them that much.
Love them.
No, yeah. I don't like massages.
Why? Okay.
I don't know. I just I can't get relaxed, and I just I hear all these great things about a massage, and boy, I love having a massage. My wife gets them all the time, and I just they just don't do it for me.
Really?
Yeah, whether it's a deep tissue one or I know there's a bunch of different kinds.
Yeah.
I had this guy that was, I mean, he had an anchor on his forearm, kind of like Popeye.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he was an ex-military guy, and it was the most painful 50 minutes that, you know, you could have. I mean, you were just sitting there going the whole time.
Tense and sweating.
Afterwards, I would just feel like euphoric. It was amazing. I mean, it was worth.
So it was painful for 50 minutes, but after that.
Yeah, after that.
You got all the knots out.
So good, yeah. So I'm sure you can get that deep tissue type of deal. And we went from talking about defensive linemen to massages.
No, but, okay, well, I'll go back to defensive line. The more pertinent question to our conversation here is, I sit there and we always talk about sacks, and I do that too. I'm just as guilty as anybody else. And then is it really happening, Dave, that quarterbacks are quicker getting the ball out? We always hear that, like Pete Carroll will talk about it. Well, you know, it's hard to get to the quarterback because they just got the quick offense all the time. Is this a league-wide thing that you're seeing, and maybe sacks are going to be going down across the league as a result of that?
You know, it's funny you say that. I wondered that same thing, because I was looking at the sack totals and the number of sacks that were gotten, and, you know, you'd have to go back and total up. Who's the guy, Shaquille Barrett, that's leading the league right
Tampa
now?
Bay.
Miles Garrett's got, what,
Miles
9 now?
Got 9.
Are guys just throwing the ball slower when he's playing?
Yeah, I don't I mean, yeah, exactly. No, there's been opportunities for them. You know, the Seahawks, that touchdown that they threw to Ricky Seals-Jones, I mean, there was plenty of time to get to the quarterback there. So, and they didn't even leave. I thought maybe it was a max protect thing where they're leaving tight ends in and running backs in, but the running back even went out. So, you know, you got five guys on four rushers. There's one guy getting double teamed. The rest are being singled. Somebody's got to win. So I'm not sure if that's the case. I do know that for the Seahawks, they've gotten better at that. They've gotten better at getting the ball out. They've got gotten better at, you know, running that little 5 yard out, the swing pass to Carson, and you saw the Cleveland doing a little bit of that. The best example would be the preseason game against Minnesota. You know, they were just throwing it out, you know, 5 yards. I mean, there was no chance to get there. No chance to get there. So I would say, yeah, teams are getting a little bit better at that. But yeah, I don't know if the sack totals are down or what. It's just not been a big part of this defense, though, in the first place. The way they play defense, it's more about taking the ball away and making big plays in key moments.
Yeah, and I would lean toward what you said. There have been opportunities. They just, for whatever reason, haven't capitalized on. I mean, you can look at Shaquille Barrett, who you brought up, and Myles Garrett are tied for the league lead at 9 apiece. Mm-hmm. And then behind them, Preston Smith was 7. Are we – so based on the idea that, well, quarterbacks are just getting rid of the ball quicker, okay, except for when they play these guys, because they're finding a way to have success, 9 sacks in 6 games.
Well, yeah, you look at Myles
as
Garrett.
As an individual, how many do the Myles Seahawks Garrett, have as a team?
Yeah. Well, Garrett has 9 and the Seahawks have 10.
Yeah.
And they've had what? They haven't had any in the last 2 games.
Yeah.
But the good news is that, Bob, as you know, and Dave knows, everybody knows this, that sacks come in bunches just like turnovers.
that's science, Jim.
Didn't the turnovers come in bunches last week?
They did.
Okay,
hey,
then.
Let's hear what we were talking about, Jaren Reed and expectations. Cut number one, Pete Carroll talking about expectations that he has and how he sort of talked to Reed before this game coming up.
I've already coached him by trying too hard, you know, and just come back, wants to do everything, you know, wants to make up for lost time and all that. I just want him to just play good technique, physical football, and not set his sights on something outside of himself. You know, he's a really good ball player, really instinctive and all that. You know, he'll be rusty, but I just don't want him to overtry and try to do too much. And so that's what we've talked about since the first time I saw him.
That's great advice, isn't it?
Don't overtry.
Because you're going to try. You're going to want to make an impact if you're Jaren Reed coming back. Boy, I missed 6 games. I want to do whatever I can to help the team. And he can probably do better helping the team by just playing within himself.
Yeah, well, and I think they'll do a good job of subbing out. You know, the Seahawks defense over the years, that's been the one thing they've done really well, I think better than other teams, is that they sub the D-linemen out pretty regularly.
Remember when Bennett and Averill first got here? And Bennett, they were kind of unhappy about the rotation and not playing at, you know, 90% or 100% of the snaps. They were kind of barking about it. And then you fast forward a couple of years and they were just talking about how that sort of saved them, their career. I mean, their ability to remain fresh and be productive at the end of the season.
Well,
so it's
and everybody talks about like receivers and DBs running, all the running they have to do inside. Like, you've been in a wrestling match or whatever, and probably with jiu-jitsu. I mean, pushing on somebody and trying to, you know, get leverage and everything, that's
exhausting.
It gasses you. Yeah. So that's probably something that people maybe underestimate. But they do a good job of, you know, subbing those guys in. And right now, Quentin Jefferson is playing so well, playing all 4 spots. And, you know, they've got a lot of good guys. They got Al Woods. They got Puna Ford that they can sub in there. So, you know, hopefully it won't, that part of it, you know, being in game shape won't affect him as much.
Another cut from Pete Carroll, cut number 4, talking about the pass rush and how he thinks Jaren will impact that.
Hasn't been very productive for sacks, and I, you know, I'm really not. I wish we had more, you know, and we'd like to have more. But Jadavian's been all around the quarterback. His pressure numbers are good. He's been close. He could have had 4 or 5 already. I think we'll see a difference now that Jay Reed's back. I think the compliment that he brings, not just what he'll do, but how he'll affect the other guys. He's a really savvy football player and takes advantage of the calls and the leans and the tells that guys give him and stuff like that. He's really good at it. It's what he just blossomed at last year. I think he'll be a factor in helping other guys play well around him.
It's interesting because he talked about Clowney. He didn't say anything about Ansa in there. But I heard the professor, and we can ask him when he joins us at 4 o'clock, he had some stat about Clowney with pressures. I don't know if it's a Pro Football Focus stat or something, but basically he was like 7th or 8th in the league, like top 10. He was like this top 10 guy in the league if you looked at pressures and batted balls and things like that, which take what you want out of that stat. I mean, you can spin them in your favor or spin them against somebody, but
yeah, I mean, that's one that's probably fair by Pro Football Focus. I don't know if they know exactly what they're looking at. But, you know, what about the fact that Clowney's drawn a bunch of holding penalties?
Yeah.
3 or 4?
I think 4.
I don't know if that's a bunch, but Four's pretty
four's
good.
A bunch. Three's a few. Four's a bunch.
Okay, good.
Two is a couple, that. You know.
Right. Yeah, so, I mean, there's that. There's pressures. There's times where, like Pete said, he had a chance at four or five. One of them was in Arizona on Kyler Murray, where, and I thought on that play, it was the one where he split the double team and fell down because he was expecting to get blocked and nobody could block him because he beat it so clean and he got back up. And I'm thinking that he thought he was going to get a horse collar by pulling him down from behind. So he tried to tackle Kyler Murray around the outside of the shoulder pads and he slithered away. So yeah, there's been, and you know, just think how you would feel about him if he'd gotten that sack. You know, you'd think, okay, yeah, I think there's a lot of pressure on Jadeveon Clowney. Notice nobody really squawks that much, at least I'm not, about Ziggy Ansah. I mean, he's starting to come around. He had, I know it was a sack in garbage time, but it was a similar type of sack as Rasheem Green had in that game.
Yeah.
Where he, Kyler Murray tried to make a move and he stayed with him, which was impressive for a, you know, a big guy. So, yeah, he's starting to come along. I think he's the one that forced that cutback run by Nick Chubb last week because he came in so clean. So, yeah, there at some point, they'll start to get it. I'm not so sure this is going to be the game. I just think this is going to be one where they're going to come in here and want to try to run, and they're going to want to try to control the clock. The one thing Ravens do really good job of is time of possession, as far as these long drives that they get going, and a lot of that's because, you know, of a running quarterback.
Couple thoughts from Jaron Reed, again, making his return cut number two, just talking about his excitement of being back.
I tried not to be the very first one here, so I was at home just waiting. I remember I was playing everything off the TV lights, and I was at home like this, just popping my eyes open, checking the time on my phone. But yeah, but I was real just excited to be back. Of course, I've been gone for like 42 days. I count every one of them, so I'm just happy to be back.
He didn't want to be the first one here, but yeah. Excited to be back. Then cut number three, talking about just what he's been doing in that time he's been out.
I just trained every day, worked out every day at Athletic Forum in Seattle with Robel. Great dude, you know. It was a great time. I had a lot of time to clear my mind and, you know, just get refreshed and just to stay in shape, stay ready.
So training, but you talked about it. You're not used to impact. You're not used to collisions. You're not used to any of that. You can work on your strength and agility and all the your cardio, but different world when you're out there on the field.
Well, you know, his adrenaline's going to carry him through this first one. Like I said, I'm more worried about him after the game. But, yeah, just any way you can get this offense off the field. They lead the NFL in average time of possession per game, the Ravens do. And they've had 14 drives that have lasted at least 5 minutes. So, yeah, they're a really good offense. They're well coached. On the huddle, we were sort of revisiting Greg Roman, the Merry Bleeping Christmas guy, mm-hmm. You know, and what a good job he does. And he coached Colin Kaepernick in those offenses with the 49ers. So, yeah, it's going to be a challenge. But, you know, honestly, I'm not trying to, like, pander to the 12s or anything. But if they were to be extra loud, that would really help. That would really help.
Looking for some false starts and getting Lamar Jackson.
Get him in a hole. One more on Reed's return. Bobby Wagner, obviously the general on the defense, talking about what his return will mean.
It's going to be great. You know, he's been such a key part of our defense, not just his play, but his leadership, to just have that back and have him back to provide some pass rush, to provide some, you know, in plays in the backfield. It's going to be huge for us.
You know, when you have a D-tackle in front of you, like a linebacker like Bobby, if I could have played behind Cortez Kennedy my entire career, I would have been so happy. I mean, I played again behind some great, you know, great players, Joe Nash and Greg Cragen in Denver. But, Tez, there were so many times where they were so worried about him. I was like, hey, look, nobody's blocking me. You make these, you know, and I would just kind of sit behind Cortez on sometimes, and he knew what he was doing because he made a tackle one time in a game. We were playing the Giants. It was Jared Bunch, who was kind of a big dude, and he made this great tackle, cut across to the guard's face, and made a tackle in the backfield. And a couple of plays after that, or a couple series later, same thing, except I just kind of sat behind Tez, and all of a sudden Jared Bunch, you know, appeared right in front of me, and I hit him. And Corky Truen, the photographer, there's an awesome picture of this where both of our feet are off the ground, I mean. Mm-hmm. And me and Jared Bunch, and I'm taking him down, and you can see, I remember my chin strap broke because the buckle was on my helmet,
right.
Broke. And I remember after that trying to fix it and I couldn't get it. If you can see in the picture in between me and Jared Bunch, the little tab, the little button falling down in between us. But anyway, I make the tackle, and then Cortez comes over and just like grabs me by the chest plate and picks me up. And he goes, "It was your turn." I was like, "Thanks, buddy." Yeah. So, I mean, that's the kind of thing that Bobby is going to enjoy, having a guy like that who's really a problem up front. I'm really hoping that he can, you know, I'm not expecting him to get double digit sacks, certainly because of the 6-game suspension, but it would be really a nice luxury to have because you have such good linebackers behind you. If you have a guy like Clowney, I mean, it sets up for this defensive line to be really good and really special. Al Woods might be one of the better run stoppers in the league. Mm-hmm. He is so hard to move. And, you know, and Puna Ford, the guy I was really excited about, I'm still waiting for him. You know, it seems like once a game he is like 6 yards in the backfield, you know, because he just gets underneath blockers and drives them back. But that kind of disruption is just a beautiful thing for linebackers especially.
Let's take two.
Take two.
Yankees Astros resume their series today after rain postponed the game four yesterday. We will carry that at 6 o'clock.
I was kind of bummed there was no baseball last night. Been kind of conditioned as these nights go on. We get done with the show, you drive home, you get home, flip the TV on, and there's something cool to watch. And last night there was nothing cool to watch.
There wasn't. But boy, the Yankees, they got to win this one, don't they? And I know they're only down 2-1. It'll just be 3-1 if they lose. But Greinke gone, and they beat him at game one, didn't they? So I mean, you look at the Yankees and being at home. I think that series is going to go 7 games. Like to see it go 7. Yeah, I think it's going to. They look like they're equally matched to me. I know that the Astros have better starting pitching, but
do you have a rooting interest?
I don't really have a rooting interest. No,
I'm rooting for the Big Maple. I know it's weird to root for the Yankees, but I want to see him succeed.
Such a nice guy.
He is a great guy.
I'm going with my guy Altuve.
Yeah,
I love Jose Altuve.
I know you had his collector's bat, the studio forever.
And remember, for him, the baseball looks like a beach ball.
That's right. It's like he's playing softball.
That's right.
Seahawks tight end Will Disley posted on Twitter how determined he remains and how loved and supported he feels through his ruptured Achilles tendon. He ended his tweet with, "If you think this is going to stop me, you don't know me very well. #Disley2020.
Wow. This kid has an amazing attitude about everything.
That's half the battle, isn't it, when you're dealing with something that devastating? I mean, you know better than anybody.
Well, and doctors always talk about that, like people going through cancer treatment and things like that, that your emotions and everything and being positive helps, right? You know, and that's the thing about him that I didn't see him go through any kind of, like I said, mourning period. I would have been like, why did this happen to me? You know, especially back to back, it's really difficult to overcome. I think the beauty of it is, though, coming back from an injury in football is that most players will tell you this, that it's so much fun playing. It's such a fun game to play, and so that's your motivation. That's the light at the end of the tunnel. But I'm glad to hear that because, man, after having gone through that, what was this, his 6th game? And he played in 4 last year. You know, but, man, he caught 6 touchdowns, had a lot of yardage. He was going to be the number 2 receiver this year.
Yeah, he was so positive after the game, right after the game. Yeah. He didn't have any what you're talking about, the mourning period, and we'll see how the Seahawks hold up with Luke Wilson and Jacob Hollister, and then you'll get Ed Dixon back in a couple of weeks. So you look pretty well set at tight end, although Pete said that they were always exploring options. We'll see if they add someone here next week, perhaps.
All right, coming up at the top of the hour, the professor, John Clayton, will be with us. But coming up next, a national voice suggesting a trade for the Seattle Seahawks team he thinks puts him over the top. Let you hear what he had to say. We come back with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
We got the Professor John Clayton joining us at the top of the hour. Don't forget, tonight, you can join 710 ESPN Seattle at Snoqualmie Casino for a live broadcast from 7 to 9 p.m. It's Hawks Live Thursday nights during the NFL season, hosted by our very own Dave Wyman, along with Paul Moyer and Michael Bumpus. And tonight only, It's your chance to win two end zone tickets to the October 20th Seahawks game against the Baltimore Ravens. Show up wearing your Seahawks colors for a chance to win. You can learn more at 710sports.com/events.
You know who the judge is for that?
You.
This guy right here.
You are the judge. So Moyer's got no say in it all. You just tell him to pipe down.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I might consult Bumpus. But
Moyer's
Moyer.
Out. Yeah, so it's out. So you need to dazzle Dave Wyman and to a lesser extent Michael Bumpus. Get out there from 7 to 9 p.m. again at Snoqualmie Casino, only if you'd like to sit in the end zone and watch this game coming up this weekend.
End zone's awesome. It'll be a great game to watch the end zone.
Yeah.
You know, from the end zone copy that you can see sometimes, and you just see the running gaps open up, and yeah, for an old linebacker, that's, you know, how I looked at the game from right in the middle, and that's where it's going to be won and lost.
Any idea who your on the phone guest will be yet or no?
I have not heard. There was two guests, but I don't want to say which one. So,
okay.
I'm not sure.
We'll show up and find out.
TBD.
Everybody. All right.
Yeah.
So there you go. A chance to win tickets. All you got to do is wear your Seahawks gear, and Dave will be the judge out
there.
Or you
can just listen. You don't really have to show up. I mean, we'd
well,
love
if you
want to
win
people.
Tickets.
Yeah, well,
if they want to win tickets, they got to show up, Dave.
We want people out at the Snoqualmie Casino.
Yeah.
Definitely. They got
yeah.
some good food out there. It's a great atmosphere.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah, it really is.
You feel like you're in Vegas when you're in that casino.
Yeah. And then you go into the one restaurant, I think it's called Vista. Just a beautiful view of all the trees and everything. Really good food there. So
yeah
so you know what? On second thought, yeah, come on out.
Yeah.
Don't listen.
Yeah.
No, wait. Still listen.
Do both. If you can't get out there, listen. If you can get out there and right. wear your Seahawks gear if you want to win those tickets. So there you go. I think we got it all covered.
Just like yesterday. Listen. Remember we were telling the radio, the texters.
Like, yeah.
Why don't you listen to what we're saying? Listen. That's all
yeah.
there is to do. It's a radio show.
Yeah.
You listen.
That becomes a hard thing for some, though. Yeah,
they hear what
as
they want to hear.
That's exactly right. We talked about Will Dissly and just his ridiculously optimistic attitude towards another severe season-ending injury, but it puts this team in a position where you're going, all right, what do you do at the tight end spot? You bring Hollister up from the practice squad. You've got Luke Wilson. Pete Carroll talking about cut number six, talking about what they're trying to do at that spot right now.
Tyron Swoops is in. That's good. He's real familiar with us. We know what he can do and how he can help us. And then we're working on some stuff.
Working Ooh. On some stuff. That's about as vague as you're going to get. Well, Tyrone Swoops was there and working on some stuff, and we're working on stuff. So there you go.
Maybe it depends a little bit on Dwayne Brown and the extent of his injury. Because Brown missing the bicep injury last week, and then it looks like he might not play again. But what I'm getting at is that if George Fant is still available as your third tight end, but if he's not playing left tackle, maybe that increases the urge to get someone right away.
Well, Ed Dixon is a guy we're waiting for his return, and cut number eight, Pete Carroll talking about that.
Well, he's still got a couple weeks yet before he can come back. He's working really hard. He's doing everything. He's running and lifting and doing all that, all that he's allowed to do. What will be, you know, telling us is when he finally can come back on the field. Can he, you know, do the football moves and the football, you know, regimen and respond and be okay with that? He's working to get ready right now. So we're very fortunate to have a chance to have a guy like Ed come back to us, and, you know, with not too much of a space in there, you know, without Will.
Just before moving away from the George Fant thing, though, real quick, you don't count him as a tight end.
I don't.
Really. You know, I mean, they're not going to throw him the ball, you know, but maybe twice or three times this year. So, you know, to get a true tight end, and to me, the answer is Ed Dixon. I mean, it's weird with him where last year, too, I felt like he got in the doghouse, and I don't know. I know that his injury last year was non-football injury, so, you know, and I don't know if he did something that they didn't want him to do medically, or I don't really know what's going on there, but, man, I sure think he is the answer. I mean, he's a great blocker, but his receptions last year, he caught all but one pass. I think they threw him 10, something like that. So, and he had a few touchdowns. He was so good. So I think he's the answer. But he talked about Tyrone Swoops. He came in that Raider game last year in London, played a little bit. He's a pretty good athlete, guy who was a big quarterback at Texas in college, but they've converted him. And, you know, I think he can help them out quite a bit. But in the meantime, Luke Wilson and Hollister, those guys have to step up.
Yeah, I'm with you on Fant. He's a tight end in name only when he's eligible out there. I mean, he's not that guy. We're talking about replacing Will Dissly, who we were viewing as the second option in terms of where Russell's going to go with the ball. But you got a national voice out there making a suggestion as to what he thinks would be good for the Seahawks. Cut number 7, that'd be Mike Golic Jr.
O.J. Howard would be very interesting, especially as we talk about the juggernaut that is the NFC West right now. O.J. Howard potentially with Seattle. They've got two tight ends on their roster right now.
Yep.
After the injury, I think Will Dissly.
Yeah, his Achilles. And he had really been kind of a breakout.
A fantasy machine.
Well, yeah,
I guess it's incredible. I mean, seeing what they were able to do with Will Dissly in that offense, if you hand them the talent of O.J. Howard, good night when you give Russell Wilson another weapon.
Yeah, I agree.
Like
I agree.
Was O.J. Howard the guy that caught the ball at the Tampa game?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, he reached up and grabbed
it. Oh, that's right. Baseball game, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at, I think, on Tampa's roster, they have O.J. Howard, Anthony Auclair, Cameron Brate, remember him, Tanner Hudson. So I would have never put that together. I would have never thought that that's how they would do it. I guess because Ed Dixon is at some point going to be available, but, you know, In getting back to the fan thing, I mean, they put Joey Hunt in as that. So that's how they treat that position. It's like an extra guard. But yeah, as far as the tight end, I just think it was a really nice luxury to have that Will Dissly. I don't think they ever expected him to be that good at catching
that
the ball.
Do they need, though, a move like that? O.J. Howard, I think you brought him up yesterday, didn't you? I mean,
well, I just saw reports out there and then with the Seahawks needing a tight end. But the more you look into it, it sounds like there's conflicting reports out of Tampa on whether he's even on the trading block or not. He's still out there for 81% of the snaps, according to the CBSSports.com story I was reading. And they're throwing more to Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. And so that everybody's putting two and two together. Maybe he's on the way out. But don't you feel like, I feel like the Seahawks are okay with Ed Dixon coming back in 2 weeks. Don't you think they're going to be just fine for the next 2 weeks? You mentioned Swoops as an option there. Hollister, they thought a lot of bringing him in from New England. And so we'll see what he has. And Luke Wilson, he might flourish in this number one role. And they're throwing the ball around anyway. I saw last week Russell threw to 8 different receivers. So I think they're going to be okay at tight end, especially with Dixon waiting in the wings.
You think about who they have at tight end, though. So George Fant, who we said, you know, not really going to count him. And then you got on the other extreme is Hollister, who's really more like a receiver because he's not a big guy, and I don't think he's a particularly good blocker. So that really just leaves Luke Wilson. Well, and then you bring in Tyrone Swoops, and he was a quarterback. You know, I mean, he's been a tight end, isn't he? In the NFL, so
I feel like we're trying to paint all these guys as viable options, whether we're talking about Fant or talking about Joey Hunt or Swoops, who's barely a guy who barely makes a roster. I mean, you're talking about replacing a guy who, you talked about it, what, 10 total games in his career to this point? Yeah. He's got a remarkable amount of touchdowns. I mean, he was incredibly productive. You don't have any of these guys that you can throw in there and say, well, I feel much better now. Now you've got that replacement. Maybe Ed Dixon would be the closest thing you're going to find to it, but none of these other names. Let's be honest. We're painting them as a viable option. They're really not. They're placeholders.
What about Luke, Dave? The second time around here with the Seahawks, is he the same player he was when he left? Does he seem slower? Does he seem about in the same neighborhood?
No, he looks the same to me. I was really impressed with that catch he made in Arizona, the one that kind of double clutched, it bounced up in the air, and no, I think that they also feel like they got him for Nick Vinette. And then what'd they trade Vinette for, like a fifth rounder or something like that? So I think they felt like those two were the same guy. But, you know, let's not forget Luke Wilson did get cut from the Raider roster, and he was out looking for a job for a while. From what, when we talked to him, it sounded like he was going somewhere else to try out. So I'm sure he would have got signed somewhere, but I don't know. I just don't really see as going into like last season and really this season, we didn't really expect much from that position. It's not, I think it's been a position that they use if they have a really good one, but if not, you know, it's just been kind of a strange experiment at tight end. And that's what was so nice about Dissly because, you know, he really reminded you of Zach Miller. And, you know, he's a great blocker and he can catch the ball. And he caught the ball a surprising amount, Dissly did. But you know, without him, you're like, eh, because remember they were going to split Jimmy Graham out. They had him on end of the line blocking, which was a mistake. So tight end, I guess, hasn't been like that key position for this offense.
Yeah. You, Jim Moore, and Danny O'Neill share a similar concern going into this game against the Ravens. We'll tell everybody what that is. Coming up next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up at the top of the hour, the professor, John Clayton, will join us on the program. Meanwhile, there's a concern shared by you, Jim, and your former co-worker here on this show anyway, now part of the morning show, Danny O'Neill.
This can't be. Danny and I never agreed on anything.
I think you do.
Do we?
I think you do. It's a concern about special teams. And do we have audio of Danny, or we just have just the brief summation of what he said, that he feels like sometimes evenly matched games like this come down to special teams, and just talking about the level of discomfort, he's starting to get concerned about Myers after he missed an extra point in Cleveland and then hit the upright on the other one that went through. Plus, Dixon, as far as punting, is 30th in the league with a net average of 39.4 yards. Just by way of comparison, his net average last year was 42.5. And I know you put some stats on the sheet.
Well, yeah, I heard Paul Gallant this morning on Danny Gallant mentioning it too, the DVOA, you know, looking at the advanced metrics there on special teams, and the Seahawks ranking 28th. And they gave up the long kickoff return last week against Cleveland. They had the punt return they allowed for a touchdown against New Orleans. So it's kind of, it's un-Seahawk-like, I guess. I mean, typically we look at the Seahawks as having good special teams, and I don't think they're above average this year. They're probably a little below average. Dixon has not been the same guy this year. Maybe it was because he was such a standout last year, and you expect all these magical things coming off of his right foot, but we haven't really seen that. We've seen a below average punter this year, and you expect him to come around. I heard Danny and Paul talking about the kicker this morning, and Danny was talking about spoiled milk and checking the expiration date on Myers.
Oh, his kicker theory.
Do you have any? I don't have any problems with Myers. The one extra point he missed, it was so windy there. Clearly, they were having a problem at that one end of the field.
Well, their guy missed at the same spot.
Yeah. And then Myers hit the upright, too, and the ball went through. So I guess
that was on the good end.
But you're not gonna make every kick as a kicker. So I think Myers,
unless you play,
I mean,
for
compared
Baltimore.
To Walsh and Seabass, I mean, this guy is golden as far as I'm concerned. But we'll see how it goes. You're definitely going to be in a disadvantage though if you're doing kicking matchups this week, because Justin Tucker for Baltimore is the best in the league.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, he's 13 for 13. He's hit a 50+. I read that since they moved in 2015, they moved the attempt back, that he's 99.3%
on the 32-yard extra point.
Yeah.
Did he hit a 62-yarder this year, or was that somebody else? Somebody hit a 62-yarder recently. I couldn't remember if it was him.
Well, his are just plus. When you watch them, if you're really into kicking like I am, I mean, they're things of beauty. I mean, they're just so high and long, and it's almost like the goalposts, the uprights could be, you know, I don't know, 8 or 10 feet apart, he could still split the middle of
it. If there's a post in the middle, he'd hit it.
He could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
51 yards was the longest one that he's
for
had.
For him? Yeah. Okay. Somebody just recently, and somebody can text in, it was a 62-yarder. But
he's also the first, the fastest player in league history to reach 1,000 points. I mean, that also, he's an opera singer.
Is he?
Oh, yeah. I saw the, was that Real Sports?
Yeah.
Yeah. They did a feature on him, and yeah, he's a legit singer, opera.
Brett Maher for the Cowboys kicked a 62-yarder.
Okay, that's what it was.
I don't know if you went to like the opera community and said, is this guy, seriously quality? But for a guy that plays football, well, sort of, he's a kicker. yeah, he was really good.
And his teammates talked about him singing in the shower and all that. You hear bellowing out of the back. And
have you ever tried to sing in an opera voice?
No.
Those people are
like joking around, yeah, but yeah. Not any serious attempt at it. Do you have any concerns about the special teams? I mean, I think these are fair concerns. I mean, Dixon hasn't been spectacular yet. I'm more concerned just about coverage. First of all, I don't think they've had any quality returns. And I asked you before whether you thought it was Lockett or the blocking, but those two haven't seemed to truly line up. We haven't had any big moments yet. Mm-mm. And then their coverage feels a little less than it should be. It doesn't feel like you've been able to really help yourselves. They've given a lot of big yardage.
Going back to last year, I mean, they had the touchdown last year, and then they gave up the huge one the other day. So, you know, it's funny. You don't see that many kickoff returns. I turned on the Cincinnati Ravens game from last week, and the opening kickoff was returned by the Bengals. And Baltimore's had one of the better coverage teams. But, yeah, you just don't see a lot of kickoff returns. I looked at the block in the back that Pete turned in to the league on Travis Homer. I didn't think it was that bad. I mean, I thought he got the side of him. So, yeah, there was a lot of unevenness in their coverage. And, you know, the guys got the cross block thing going, and there was a huge hole right there in the middle. So, yeah, I would say that it's been less than satisfactory, certainly.
Should the Seahawks consider not having Lockett be a returner anymore? With the Disley injury, if you lose Tyler Lockett, I'm asking you this question because I have a feeling I know what Dave's answer is. Because he's a football player out there, and he's maybe less likely. You know, I mean, he could get injured when he's being a receiver, returner, it wouldn't matter. But I tend to think that there's more of a chance for an injury. My research has shown.
Make him not throw any long passes to? There's also a more of a risk.
But has Lockett done anything spectacular as a returner this year that makes you go, yeah, they should leave him out there when you're weighing it out versus the risk of perhaps losing your number one receiver? Mm. If you lost Tyler Lockett and then you're down to DK Metcalf, a rookie, as your number one receiver, then you've really got troubles. I mean, losing Disley's one thing, but losing Lockett's another.
Yeah, I if they were going to make a switch with him, I would prefer their motivation be we want to see somebody else out there just to see if there's a burst. If you want to put Ursula out there or
how about Amadi,
one of those guys, and just see, all right, does it provide a spark? Is there just something different? I don't think that's an unreasonable concern, but I would like to see him do it just based on, it's not been clicking for whatever reason, whether it's the blocking or whether it's him in particular. Let's just switch it up and see if we get a spark from one of these other two guys out there.
Yeah, now that you start talking about special teams, what are they, 5 for 7, I think, as far as field goals go?
I think he's missed two, yeah.
Yeah, and then, you know, there's that. Then there's the huge return against Cleveland, the kickoff, the punt return. There's been a lot of shaky deals. There was a punt that was almost blocked in the Rams game.
Yep.
But, you know, on the good side, they got the blocked punt. But, yeah, it's usually, I mean, you want to never lose a game because of your special teams, and you want to win a couple during the season, and that hasn't happened yet.
All right, coming up, you got Thursday Night Football happening tonight. Is Patrick Mahomes going to look more like an MVP than he has recently? We'll talk to the professor about that. He joins us next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.